The doctrine of the Trinity directs us, if we take the personality of Father, Son, and Spirit and the communion, the perichoresis of the three persons seriously at the same time, then the doctrine of Trinity directs us to a social personalism or a personal socialism. But Western personalism, religiously portrayed, is and was monotheistic. And Eastern socialism, collectivism, etc., as we call it, religiously portrayed, is pantheism. Thus, the two concepts, personalism and socialism, become irreconcilable. Let us try to demythologize both modern monotheism and modern pantheism, personalism and socialism, with the help of the insights which we get into the Trinity of God through the theology of the cross and the Trinity. I come now to the last point, the ecclesiastical significance of the doctrine of Trinity. I would like finally to turn to another side of monarchical monotheism, a side that Erik Peterson, in his wonderful study, overlooked. We can understand his oversight. It was in the year 1926 that he converted to the Catholic Church, where both doctrine and praxis are conceived in terms of the so-called monarchical episcopate. In the time of the Apostolic Fathers, let me explain this now, this idea of the monarchical episcopate, in the idea of the Apostolic Fathers, Christianity had already spread widely into Asia Minor. New congregations had been established over the entire area. Thus, the critical question was about the unity of the congregation and the church. At that time, Ignatius of Antioch, formulated the principle of monarchical episcopacy, a principle that has persisted in many churches, especially the Roman Catholic Church, to the present. The idea was simple and convincing: one bishop, one congregation. How did he support this theologically? Ignatius offered the following analogy: one God, one Christ, one bishop, one church. And this is a guarantee for the unity of the church. The bishop represented Christ to the congregation, and Christ represented the one God. But behind this analogy is, it's easily to discover, the image of the monarchical monotheism: one God, one Christ, one bishop, one church. The bishop ought to establish his church just as the king ought to establish his kingdom. In politics and in parishes, the pattern of the celestial sovereign reigned supreme. This doctrine of the monarchical episcopate resurfaced in the Middle Ages in the theology of the papacy and in the infallibility of the pope. Here we find the following representative analogy: one God, one Christ, one Peter, one Pope, one Church. And this is a guarantee for the unity of the Church. The papacy was the office of Peter, and it was called the office of unity. The unity of the Church was guaranteed by the supreme authority of the one Pope. The authority of the Pope was guaranteed by the apostolic succession in Peter's line. And the authority of Peter was guaranteed by the words of the historical Jesus himself in Matthew 16, "You are Peter the rock, and on this rock I will build my church." And the authority of Peter was guaranteed by the powers of the keys. The Latin sums up this line of authority: ubi Petrus, ibi Ecclesia. And if you have followed the speeches of Pope John Paul II in New York or Philadelphia, this is it: ubi Petrus, ibi Ecclesia. Here is the theological argument for the unity and the hierarchy, the holy power of the Church. But hidden behind this it is the image of monarchical monotheism. Establishing the unity of the church and the infallibility of the Pope on Matthew 16 is, is at least dangerous because it posits historical continuity and only human analogy in history from the words of the historical Jesus to the historical Peter to each historical Pope. It does not matter whether Jesus died and was resurrected from the dead or not. This apostolic succession is still valid. The argument of the apostolic succession then has not very much to do with the center of the New Testament, with Jesus' death and resurrection. There is, however, another, a Trinitarian argument for the unity of the church that has everything to do with Jesus' death and resurrection. We find it in the high priest's prayer of Jesus in John 17:20, the famous words of the ecumenical movement. May they all be one. But then we have to go on quoting it. As thou, Father, art in me and I in thee, so also may they be one in us. Here the unity of the congregation is obviously a Trinitarian union. It is established in the union of the Father and the Son. It is effected in mutual love. The power of the uniting Spirit draws the congregation into the Trinitarian union of God Himself. The prayer of Jesus guarantees the union of the congregation. The union of the congregation and the union of the congregation with God, yes, in God. I believe that this Trinitarian argument for the union of the church from John 17 is more profound than the monotheistic argument for the monarchical episcopate from Matthew 16. It is not only theologically more profound, but it describes the union of the congregation in a profoundly different terms. Let me try to make this as clear as I can with a confrontation at the end. God as Almighty Sovereign is experienced on earth in the hierarchy and in the infallible authority of the Pope, especially if it is such a character and a charming Pope as John Paul II. But God as love is experienced in the congregation, where each one accepts the other just as everyone is accepted by Christ. Monarchical monotheism establishes the church on earth as a network of hierarchy, as a holy power. And therefore, many people speak of the church in terms of speaking only of the hierarchy. The hierarchy, the priests, etc., they are the church, and the people are invited to have communion with the church. But the church is only the hierarchy. The doctrine of Trinity establishes the church as a charismatic congregation, united with the Son and the Father through the Spirit and the experience of the gifts of the Spirit. The Orthodox theologian Paul Yevdokimov represents this difference succinctly, saying the principle of the Trinity replaces the principle of dominion with the principle of consensus. In Trinitarian thinking, authority and obedience, blind obedience, are replaced by dialogue and consensus. In Trinitarian thinking, hierarchy is replaced with brotherhood and sisterhood of all believers. In Trinitarian thinking, faith in revelation is not grounded in ecclesiastical authority, but in understanding the divine truths of the revelation. Trinitarian thinking directs us to the communalization of the church, and I'm happy to say this in this place here, a church governed by presbyteries and synods. This is the other form of organizing the church in a presbyterial synodal order instead of a hierarchical order. This is Trinitarian thinking. Trinitarian thinking directs us then also to the democratization of nations governed by the people. Both things belong together. Well, this confrontation, I hope, makes the alternative between hierarchical thinking of monotheism and communal thinking in the doctrine of the Trinity critical and sharp enough. Thank you very much.